Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Konser, and I'm joined today by a writer, blogger, webcomics creator. She's the author of the book Solutions and Other Problems, and the number one New York Times bestseller, Hyperbole and a Half, from the webcomic of the same name. Allie Brosh, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Thank you so much.
So before we get started, I would like to remind all of our listeners that we are currently in the middle of KBOO's all-important fall membership drive. If you donate now through October 31st at kboo.fm/give, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $4,500. Because we're staying safe and trying to get those COVID numbers down, we are not in the station to take your calls right now, but you can show your support by giving online, kboo.fm. KBOO is one of the very last media outlets that still brings you local and independent news, music, and public affairs. We've been doing this here in Portland for over half a century, and this program has been coming to you for nearly 17 years now, inviting important cultural figures into the studio and venturing out to events that might fly beneath the radar of the big media monoliths. So yes, you can support this very special programming today by going online to kboo.fm/give, or if you like, you can mail a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. So Allie, this book is an epic collection. It's 7 years in the making. Tell us a little bit about your process, how your writing and your art come together. There are 25 chapters in Solutions and Other Problems, and they're mostly self-contained stories, but is there a thread you wanted to make sure was there to hold everything together?
Yeah, I wanted to arrange the chapters in, you know, I wanted them to be able to be read mostly independently of each other. Like, there are some that have continuations in other chapters, but when taken as a whole, I wanted it to sort of tell a story in a less specific way than within the chapter. If you read the whole thing and kind of think about the connections between the chapters, like what the transition might mean, what the juxtaposition might mean, I'm hoping that those parts tell a story.
And how about the title, Solutions and Other Problems?
So I'm the type of person who is always trying to fix things, always trying to come up with the solutions for the problems I have. And the issue is that I don't always know how to do that. And so I end up creating more problems. I take the center of mass of the problem and transfer it to a different area. So it feels like progress.
So you've compared your stories to stand-up comedy only with pictures. Now, as an introvert, is it hard for you to get up on stage, but much easier to work with the art?
Yes. I really like the feel of stand-up comedy, and I was trying to replicate that without having to actually get up in front of people and talk or to memorize like bits. I would rather work on editing and refining than the process of memorization. And so when I first started writing, I was planning on just writing, not doing the pictures. Art seemed like a separate thing. It didn't seem like a thing that would go with writing to me. But in trying to write comedy, I felt very limited by the lack of that physicality, that presence of the comedian. It's a very important thing, stage presence. You know, if you've watched a video of a stand-up comedian versus just listened to the audio, it's a very different experience. And so I was hoping to find something that would give me the same type of physicality in, you know, on the printed page, or on a, you know, on a blog or webcomic. And so that's how the idea to add pictures got started.
Now, your original plan for being a grown-up was to use your degree in human biological sciences. And you say that when you started the blog, when you started Hyperbole and a Half, that was originally a way of avoiding studying for a physics exam?
Yes, I was taking summer courses at the very tail end of my collegiate career. And I had a physics final coming up and I was putting off studying for it because I do pretty much anything besides what I'm supposed to do. I'm willing to be productive in any direction besides the direction I'm supposed to go. And that is how I started my blog originally. I did end up studying for the final eventually. It just took me a while. But yeah, ended up being a worthwhile detour.
And yeah, you grew up in the Mountain West. You've lived in California, Idaho, Colorado, Montana, Oregon, and you've always been surrounded by animals.
Yes.
And in your comics, in your stories, one of your gifts is your talent for drawing expressive animals, dogs, cats, horses. They all have these dynamic poses. And on the other hand, when you're drawing yourself, your style is much more basic, you know, kind of iconic. You've got this one particular avatar that represents you in both of your books.
Yeah. And it looks a bit more like an animal than a person itself. Cause I sort of think of myself like an animal. It's my way of looking at myself that makes me feel more compassionate toward myself. When I can see myself as the weird little alien animal creature that I am, rather than this fancy person with person dignity and person thoughts.
How is quarantine working out for you? I think different people are having very different reactions.
So my reaction, I didn't have much of an adjustment period because I'm normally a shut-in. I've been accustomed to the shut-in lifestyle for a number of years now. So it wasn't a difficult transition for me. I have been struck by the way it seems to be affecting other people, just the way that the current climate, politically, socially, just everything we've been through over the last 4 or so years as a country and in the world, I think has, even to somebody who barely leaves the house, it's really apparent that we've been through something. I've been asked by people how the internet seems different now compared to how it was when I, you know, last was online in a significant way, 7 years ago. And my answer is that people seem gentler. It seems like we've really, really been through something. And that sounds like a crazy thing to say about the internet, but, it was a really wild experience to see. It was sort of like this time capsule type thing where, yeah, it seems like people are being much more gentle and caring with each other because we've sort of had a run-in with mortality or with our own fragility as a species. And we're, my hope is that, you know, that it continues in this way and that we continue to be gentler and more caring and kind with each other.
Yeah, you did have this long stretch where you took time away from the internet as well as in person. And that's actually something really common with artists, especially introverted ones. So I'm sure that just the sudden fascination of people with your work, the book Hyperbole and a Half being a number one New York Times bestseller, that just must have been just kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I really realized the extent of how introverted I am until like people were paying attention to me. And then it was just like, oh my goodness, this is scary. I thought that this was not going to be quite as scary as it is. But yeah, it was an absolutely crazy experience. And I think led to some very like uncomfortable existential questions for me. Like I remember during my first book tour, we had unexpected levels of turnout for all the events. And we were like exceeding the capacity for venues. There are like lines of people waiting to talk to me that like wrapped around city blocks. And I remember being like, what on earth is this all about? Like that I don't understand it as a person. Like I can't relate to that view of myself. It made me feel like very, I don't know, comparatively small and insignificant because it seemed so drastically disproportionate of a reaction to have to me. It still feels, you know, like a go 7 years between in books, it was hard the last time. This time it's like relearning all over again how to exist in the world.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Konser, and I'm talking today with comics artist and storyteller Ali Brosh. She's the author of the books Solutions and Other Problems and Hyperbole and a Half, Unfortunate Situations, Flawed Coping Mechanisms, Mayhem, and Other Things That Happened. And while everybody's enjoying this conversation today, I do want to remind our listeners that you can help keep this community radio outlet strong. Donate today at kboo.fm/give. We are being cautious during this pandemic, so we're not in the station to take your calls right now, but you can show your support by giving online, kboo.fm. It's so easy to become a member of this long-standing independent media outlet that has brought so much joy and culture to this place we call home. You can join today at any level, $5, $10, or $20 a month, at kboo.fm/give. And if you donate now through October 31st at kboo.fm/give, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $4,500. Support this program and all the independent news, music, and public affairs that are so important to us all right now. Once again, that's kboo.fm/give. Or if you like, you can mail a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. So, Ali, one of the longer stories in your book, Solutions and Other Problems, is called Losing. And it's really a monsoon of a story. I mean, you start out right away, just you're diving into the absurdity of existence. You're laying out everything about this mystery illness that you have. You're deteriorating health. You've got this brush with mortality that's giving you a pull towards nihilism. And then, you know, in quick succession, you spin from getting surgery right into the publicity tour for your first book, and then your need to be alone afterwards for the holidays. And that's when you hear the news about your sister.
Yeah, it was, I remember everything about that moment. You know, those moments where it's so traumatic that your brain takes a crystal clear picture of it.
Yeah. It had to be just like the walls were all falling down at once.
Yeah, my husband at the time, who's now my ex-husband, wonderful person still, but my phone was dead, so my mom couldn't get a hold of me. And so she called him. And I remember just by the tone in his voice and the way his face looked when he was handing the phone to me, I knew something was going wrong. Something really bad had happened.
And in some strange way, during the mourning process, you step into the role of the strong member of the family.
I don't know whether I needed to do that, but I think that there's something about, like, however my brain is set up, when things are going very badly, I feel like I have to, like, I don't know. I learned most of my social skills from wolves. I greatly admired wolves as a child, and so I think I internalized some of their social values, and I think I call it wolf mode in my own head. But I go into this, like, all right, just stoic, like, gotta do the best I can to reel it in and be strong for everybody. And the tragedy is that I'm not a very strong person. Naturally, I have those values. I have the part of me that tells me I should be like this, but it's more difficult for me than I think for a lot of people. I'm quite sensitive.
Yeah. Grief is a strange beast. This seems like a perfectly good time to let listeners know that the number for the National Suicide Prevention Hotline is 800-273-TALK. And sometime in the next couple of years, it'll simply be 988. But for now, it's still 800-273-8255. 8255. You know, I've talked to some of the people who've worked these hotlines, and they know that the scariest thing that you can hear from a caller is, I just want the pain to stop.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the point at which the person has started to come up with a logical justification for going through with the plan. And that's the, at least in my experience, that's where it starts seeming really scary to me. I know if it's starting to feel like, oh, I'm thinking of like reasons that this would be a good idea. That's typically the time where it's like, yeah, I should probably call somebody or do something about this.
In Hyperbole and a Half, you have this narrative arc, and it runs through, the first chapter is Adventures in Depression, or Depression Part One. And you talk about how your depression got so horrible that it actually broke through to the other side and became a sort of fear-proof exoskeleton.
Yeah, or so I thought. It was the numbness. It was the impending numbness at the time. But it was a pretty major moment. I mean, I mentioned a few minutes ago that I'm a very sensitive person, and I've always seen that as a handicap of sorts, something that I have been trying to overcome, and in a very real way, trying to get over having feelings. And the numbness or anhedonia of my depression felt like that, like felt like I'd finally succeeded. I don't have feelings anymore. And very, very soon afterwards, I discovered that feelings are the things that make life interesting. When you don't have them, things feel very boring and very intangible.
Right. It was a superpower for one hot moment. And then
yeah.
I do want to encourage people to actually read the stories. These are in Hyperbole and a Half, either the book or the webcomic online, because I don't want to give the impression that these are just dolorous stories here. There's all this humor and absurdity leaking out. And part of where the absurdity breaks through in Depression Part Two is where you are down on the floor in the kitchen and you discover a shriveled kernel of corn underneath the refrigerator.
Yeah, when I saw the piece of corn, it hit a nerve and I had a laughing fit that is possibly even to this day the strongest laughing fit I've ever had. It was genuinely scary, the type where you can't breathe and you're incapacitated. And I think in the years since, I've tried to figure out what it was about this piece of corn alone. In a vast expanse of floor that caused me to laugh so hard. And I think it was because I related to it. It felt like an exact representation of the feelings I was going through at the time. And yeah, that's like the type of humor that I have a list somewhere of things that I found unusually funny. And I think that this is when I started realizing why I laughed at the corn and what led to writing the intro to Solutions and Other Problems, which is about a balloon that I saw tied to a truck going 90 miles an hour.
Oh, I was going to recommend that you might read that story from the beginning of Solutions and Other Problems.
Oh, yeah. Oh, let me do that first, because that actually would be a good setup for the list.
Okay.
I saw a balloon going 90 miles per hour. It was tied to a truck, so there was an explanation for it, but I don't know. I guess you still just never expect to see a balloon going that fast. Balloons aren't designed for that. They aren't aerodynamic enough. This one was wobbling all around in spastic little circles, making a sound like whoop, 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 whoop. It seemed genuinely out of control. I was laughing so hard I had to pull over. I feel just like that balloon. And so that's one of the items on my list of funny things that I've seen. And the others are, there was a potato mixed in with like the lemons in the grocery store. Like somebody had a potato and they just set it there. But things like the inanimate objects in situations I relate to, That's like my, the thing that makes me laugh the hardest.
Whenever I would be assigned to read a Franz Kafka story, or I would go to see a Ingmar Bergman film, I felt like I was the only person laughing.
I do relate to that, because I feel like there's absurdity in things that are incredibly detailed. Like when you see something that is true and detailed, it in a similar way to like why I laugh at, you know, pieces of corn and balloons and potatoes and with the lemons. I think it's a similar kind of joke where you're seeing the reality of something and what it communicates with like context and all of the other information is quite funny and hits the part of me that is like a helpless animal that relates to it, that relates to the like ennui or the drama or the even like the bleakness in a way. Yeah, I definitely think stuff in that wheelhouse can be quite humorous.
Well, there's a self-awareness to the bleakness.
Yeah. It's presented in a way that like I can connect to, rather than like, oh, this is bleak and hopeless and horrible. It's like bleak, but it's in just an off enough way that, yeah, you can, yeah, it's bleak, but bleakness can be funny.
A lot of your most popular stories are about the randomness of children and your own stories of doing random things. People might forget these or repress them. And you have all these stories from when you're 2, 3, 4 years old and just insisting on doing these, engaging in these very odd activities.
I don't know where the impulse comes from. Maybe it's curiosity. Maybe I just want to see what's going to happen. But I've always had a drive to just do strange things, or what I've learned are strange things. Like my parents didn't want us to grow up watching TV. Like my grandma had a TV and we'd sometimes sneak over there and watch hers, but we didn't really have a lot of that stuff. We just grew up out in the sticks running around. One of my favorite hobbies was trying to sneak up on deer.
You really were paying attention to the wolves.
Yes. I did learn a lot of social cues from animals. I had friends, obviously, but I spent a lot of time alone in the forest, and my development was not allowed to be influenced by things like what people think of me. And it was actually very difficult for me when I started realizing like, oh my God, I'm a weirdo, because I am a weirdo, and I have strange preferences. I have the desire to do weird things. I find myself in the position of explaining a lot because the things I'm doing are so strange that they require explanation to onlookers.
There's a story that you did early on about your childhood called Menace. It's fascinating because it kind of touches on the whole idea of masks and personas. And in this story, you're only 4 years old, but you've got a dinosaur costume, and somehow every time it starts out in Halloween, but it goes onward from there because you discover that every time you put on this dinosaur costume, you kind of turn into a dinosaur.
It felt like my like superhero power, being inside this costume. I felt powerful. And so power is a big theme in a lot of the stuff I do, and particularly in Solutions and Other Problems. But this was sort of like an early exploration of that, of like what your limitations seem like when you feel powerful versus when you don't. And when I was wearing this dinosaur costume, I felt incredibly powerful, and it made me feel like, oh, well, you know, as a human child, I'm not supposed to take these crayons and scribble all over the wall and then throw them at my teacher when she tries to get them away from me. But as a dinosaur, maybe that's on the table now. I can do those kinds of things as a dinosaur. And even the punishments seemed different as a dinosaur. They felt like they weren't directed at me. They were directed at this dinosaur, and it spiraled out of control. And I would put on the costume just recreationally after Halloween. It took my parents a while to figure out what was going on, though, because the explanation that the teacher had given them for why I was flipping out was, oh, it was probably the Halloween candy. And so they were under the impression that the problem was sugar. And so it took them quite a while to figure out that it was the dinosaur costume causing these outbursts, or possibly just me and my relationship to the dinosaur costume.
I think the power of your comics, of your books, is that I think a lot of writers, a lot of artists would say, well, this incident that I've experienced is just too out there, and I'm just going to put it aside because it's silly to try to share it with people and try to get them to relate. And you just go for it. You put something out there and you insist, look, can you relate to this? And that there's a power in that.
I mean, I noticed somewhat early on that people seemed to be relating to the things I was writing, despite, like, I made some attempts to be like, all right, this one they surely will not relate to. This will prove to them once and for all that I am the weirdo that I am claiming to be. And there will be people who can relate to this. So far, I have found that to be untrue. Sometimes it's fewer people than, you know, others, but there's usually at least one person that's like, you know, I've experienced a version of that. And it might not be exactly the same thing, but it's very therapeutic for me to have that kind of connection with, you know, even some person I'm never going to meet. There's usually at least one person that's like, I get that. It's incredibly heartening.
Well, you've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Counsor. And my guest today has been comics artist and storyteller Ali Brosh, author of the books Solutions and Other Problems and Hyperbole and a Half, Unfortunate Situations, Flawed Coping Mechanisms, Mayhem, and Other Things That Happened. Ali, it's been a real pleasure to talk with you today.
It's been a pleasure talking with you too, Con.
Now, for our listeners who might be interested in your various projects, how can they find out more? Where can they go?
Oh, goodness. So Googling Solutions and Other Problems will probably take you to my book. I am on Instagram as of recently. It's ALLIE_BROSH is, I believe that's my Instagram handle. Facebook, it's at Real Hyperbole and a Half, I believe. Or if you Google Hyperbole and a Half Facebook, that's how you find me on there.
And you're posting again. Your fans are happy.
I am posting on Facebook. I've been doing a photo album that chronicles the last 7 years. And it's been a very fun project. It's taken off in some unexpected directions.
Well, thanks again. And thanks also to our listeners on the radio dial and at KBOO.FM. And a very special thanks to Ken Jones for his expert work engineering today's program. You can find an archived version of this show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter @wordsandpicture.